A few years back, we asked WNYC's Sarah Fischko to assemble some of the more memorable attempts to put the unconscious on the big screen.
I asked Dr. Erwin Hirsch, a PhD psychologist and psychoanalyst, the question I've always wanted to ask a shrink. When you see a portrayal of an analyst in the movies, well, how does it make you feel?
I hate seeing portrayals. I could practically never remember an analyst portrayed in any way that I wasn't annoyed, angered by in any medium.
Analysts, it turns out, really do look at these movies.
I think that analysts are concerned about how they're portrayed, not so much having to do with just that they're analysts, but that psychoanalysis has taken a real downturn in the last couple of decades.
Dr. Gail Saltz is chairman of public information at the New York Psychoanalytic Institute.
And I think that they're trying to understand why that's happened, and certainly that has something to do with their image.
Analysts are portrayed almost invariably as powerful. The power to change people, the power to extract secrets from their patients, the power to recover memories for good or ill.
Try remembering. Let your mind go back to your childhood. Was it happy?
Ingrid Bergman, treating Gregory Peck in Spellbound.
I'm haunted, but I can't see by what.
Can't have been too bad for the image of analysis. Back in the days when the Europeans in Hollywood were all on the couch. Spellbound even used David O. Selznick's real-life analyst as a consultant on analytic matters. Not that it helped much.
And if we can unlock one tiny memory, it'll give us a key to the others.
That's in the tradition of the cathartic cure.
Dr. Glenn Gabbard is a professor of psychiatry at Baylor College of Medicine and co-author of Psychiatry in the Cinema. His book lists more than 400 films which involve some form of mental health treatment.
My hand hurts.
Your hand is remembering. Open your mind and the pain will leave.
Gregory Peck suddenly has his flashback to a repressed memory.
It's burning. My hands hurt.
And
remember.
He's miraculously cured.
Pretty dramatic for an analytic session.
If you actually put a video camera in my office or any other therapist's office, it would be so boring that people would demand their money back. Nothing exciting happens, generally, in a therapist's office.
If only it could be the way it is in the movies.
How do you know she's willing to be psychoanalyzed?
Oh, she will if I ask her to.
Fred Astaire, analyzing, sort of, Ginger Rogers in Carefree.
Well, you do know that you have two minds, the conscious and the subconscious.
Really?
It works all the time, even when you sleep. It never forgets anything.
Is that so?
Then dancing together at the country club. What could a 1938 movie audience have made of that? In that era, the power, perhaps, to lift one out of the doldrums with a little analysis, a little dancing, meant a lot. In more recent times, the power of the analyst has been viewed with wild ambivalence. We like to see them godlike. We like to see them tender, and we like to see them mean. And talk about power, sometimes the image is so striking it affects analysis off-screen.
Scared.
Feelings are scary.
Someone will come in, like after Ordinary People in 1980.
And if you can't feel pain, then you're not going to feel anything else either.
And in this case, it was a college student who was in her early 20s, and she said, "I was wondering if you can hug me." Like Judd Hirsch hugged Timothy Hutton in Ordinary People.
You're here and you're alive.
And I said, well, now, no, we have to use words here. This is psychotherapy. And she said, I know it's just a movie, but the point is it helped him.
I don't know what I would have done if you hadn't been here. You're really my friend?
I am. Count on it.
I guess it helped Nick Nolte, too, to run into Barbara Streisand in Prince of Tide.
You can do it. You can handle it.
While she's analyzing his sister, she winds up expressing more than doctorly love towards him.
Please take me with you.
Prince of Tides was definitely a time when I heard a lot of patients talking about this.
Dr. Gail Saltz.
Is it okay to do that, or is it not okay to do that? Or I found that very disturbing, that analysts could be like this.
Yeah, let's do it. I'm pumped. Let's let the healing begin.
Such boundaries are routinely crossed in the movies, as they are in Good Will Hunting.
Do you buy all these books retail, or do you send away for like a shrink kit that comes with all these volumes included?
Do you like books?
When Robin Williams extracts humanity from a tortured Matt Damon in that film, the cathartic cure and the godlike shrink are one.
It's not your fault.
I know.
No, no, you don't. It's not your fault.
It was a statement that this can't work. unless I really express a kind of a love for you that your rotten father or mother didn't do. And I express it overtly and palpably by hugging you, by telling you about my personal life, by taking you home with me, et cetera, et cetera.
Oh, my God. Oh, my God, I'm so sorry.
The flip side of being a deity is being completely evil, and those aren't very far from one another.
Some analysts are still reeling from Brian De Palma's Dress to Kill, in which Michael Caine played an analyst.
No waiting. Go right in. The doctor will be with you shortly.
Dr. Gabbard considers it to have been a low point for Shrinks.
Michael Caine, whenever he got turned on by a woman patient, would dress up as a woman, take out his razor blade, and murder the patient in the elevator, which we think is bad technique.
A variety of shrinks. That really is all one can ask.
Do you think I was driving him away, Dr. Sobel?
Looking at them, laughing at them, helps us audiences work things out.
I mean, maybe there's still hope.
Well, he did take out a restraining order against you, and I have to be honest, that's usually not a good sign.
So when it comes to analysts in the movies, I can honestly say that...
Time's up.
For On the Media.
Time's up.
I'm Sarah Fishko.
And we will continue next week when I get back from my vacation.
I'm David Remnick, host of the New Yorker Radio Hour. There's nothing like finding a story you can really sink into that lets you tune out the noise and focus on what matters. In print or here on the podcast, The New Yorker brings you thoughtfulness and depth and even humor that you can't find anywhere else. So please join me every week for The New Yorker Radio Hour, wherever you listen to podcasts.